Are you ready to experience something extraordinary? Cultural gems in Croatia, ancient temples in Asia, art in Italy. We'll take care of everything. Flights, accommodation, excursions, local guides and all that planning. Travel department. Let's see more.
I'm Gary Cook, and you're listening to Trailblazers.
Today's trailblazer is Susan Bray. Susan is a cricketer of international distinction, representing her country 40 times and helping establish Ireland as a force in women's cricket. She was inducted into the Cricket Hall of Fame, and she is currently the president of Clontarf Cricket Club. Susan, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Gary. Good to be here.
Susan, it says in your Hall of Fame that quote-unquote, Susan terrified batters at home and abroad. You were a fast bowler.
Yeah.
Was that what you specialised in?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I prided myself on my ability to terrorise people. No, it was what I worked on. It was what I trained. I didn't know that that's what I was going to be, but it ended up my action just... It was fast for the time. I'm not saying it would be fast now, but it certainly was at the time.
Were you ever clocked in terms of your pace?
No, we were never. We had one video session. That's all that we ever had. But no, I was never clocked for my pace. But I was picked to play on the men's team, so I knew I would have to be pretty quick to be able to cope with not being able to hit back over my head. But definitely, it was fast enough. Yeah.
Okay, so what attracted you to cricket? Your mother played cricket.
Yeah, mum played. There was a revival in about 76 of cricket in Leinster in general, and Clontarf set up a team, and it was mainly made up of wives of some of the rugby guys and some of the cricketers and girlfriends. And it started, and Stella Owens had been playing with the schoolboys since she was very young, so she was by far the youngest on the team, so she would have been 12, and then it went all the way up to Mary Coffey, who would have been in her 50s at the time, and she was a superb player as well, who would have played back again in the 1950s and 60s when it was played again.
Now, I did speak to Stella, and she did tell me the story that there was quite a degree of separation and kind of pushback in relation to women's cricket at that time, in the sense that, you know, you weren't part of the Irish Cricket Union as such, were you?
We were very much our own. Both, look, in Clontarf as well, we were at the Clontarf Women's Cricket Club. We were our own section within the overall Clontarf cricket. We were very lucky to get maybe the nights and the trainings that we wanted, because we were very much the schoolboys would have been facilitated first and then the ladies' cricket. So we got what we were given. Mm-hmm. But then we had amazing facilities and we didn't have to pay the subs that the men would have had to pay. But with regards to the Irish cricket, we were totally separate again. They established the Irish Women's Cricket Union. And there was the Leinster Women's Cricket Union as well, just as a sub-branch of that. And we were totally separate to the men. No funding, no anything at all, no sponsorship deals would have been the same or were crossed over. We literally looked after everything ourselves.
So when you were growing up and playing in Clontarf, did you play with the boys?
I played school boys. I trained with the boys. We actually had established schoolgirls cricket. So Eileen Byrne and Phyllis Spence would have started kind of the schoolgirls section. And myself and still friends now, Cecily Dixon, would have been down playing. And we had enough daughters and sisters that would have come down and played schoolgirl cricket on a Wednesday afternoon. But then, because I had a younger brother, David, who played on a Friday night, I was very lucky that Keith Lewis used to let me play with the schoolboys. So I used to get a double whammy during the week while Mum was playing cricket, or if there was a match on, I was always allowed to play with the schoolboys.
So your experience, nonetheless, was positive?
Oh, totally,
even though you were, to a degree, being discriminated against, you didn't feel totally...
It didn't even dawn on me that was the case. Okay. It wasn't until, you know, much later when we looked to get Friday night cricket, to get everyone down to the club, and the Clontarf wouldn't have been as keen. The Friday night was the schoolboy night. And we would have preferred Friday night to have our game and then to go into the bar afterwards, because we used to get quite a few down watching our games. So we thought Friday night would be a better night for it. But we never got that Friday night. And still to this day, we've got 450 kids down on a Friday night. So I suppose it worked out. But definitely, I never, ever felt discriminated. It didn't dawn on me that that was the way things were.
Now, you are kind of to a degree in kind of male pursuits, because fast bowling would have been something that people considered with, you know, pretty aggressive and rather angry men.
Yes.
Some of whom were incredibly fast. But getting hit by a cricket ball, no matter what pace, is not a very nice thing. Cricket ball is very hard for people who don't play.
Yeah.
So, okay, so just to go back, what attracted you to fast bowling?
Well, as I said, I didn't know I was a fast bowler, but I picked up the ball. I think when you're a kid, you have to, you think if you're not involved in the action, you're not going to be picked. And I say to kids now that you can make yourself a brilliant fielder and still be picked on a team just for fielding alone. Like, why does someone want to be a wicketkeeper? There's only one wicketkeeper on the team. Very hard when you've got a gang of kids that you're trying to say, oh, we'll pick the best one. But there's always a few bowlers, and then everyone nearly gets to bat. I went out into our back garden, and I used to practice with a sock, because mum wouldn't let me practice with the tennis ball in case I broke a window or broke someone else's window. So I had to practice with a sock, and I drew stumps at the end of the garden, and I smashed a few trees up, and I practiced and practiced and practiced until I was just accurate. That's all I wanted. The pace didn't matter at the time. The pace comes with your run-up and your general speed, and comes to you with your strength. But I just wanted to be accurate. Pinpoint accuracy was what I wanted.
So you were a very determined self-starter.
Yes. Yeah. Once I knew I was good at something, or I had a knack and I could get this ball just to be hitting the same spot all the time, I said, this is something. Yeah, I can do this. I can do this. So like, I was 9 when I started, and I was as accurate then as I kept up until 12 when I started playing schoolgirl cricket. But I was tiny. I was really small, really light. From a speed point of view, I didn't have the speed then. I remember my Irish coach saying, I can't pick you, you're too tiny. And he used to look at me and say, you're just so small. And I really was small. And I grew 4 inches one summer. And that was me picked on the Irish team the next day.
But just
next year.
To put it into perspective for people who don't play cricket, like, having height as a bowler is a real advantage, because you basically got more control, you got more to aim at.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're very small, it's a little bit like serving in tennis.
Yeah.
You've got less to aim at.
You've a lot more work to do.
Yeah.
Either your jump has to be higher so that you're bringing your arm down from a height. And that's why I just admire anyone, or I'm thrilled to coach anybody who has a bit of height. And if they don't use it, I'm saying stand up tall, use your arm, use your height, so that ball comes down with that bit of extra pace, and a little bit of lift at the end is just fantastic. But it's I wasn't, but I was really accurate. And then it was only when I started to get bigger, taller and stronger, that's when it started to just nip in a little bit, or I started the tricks. And Pod Hughes would have been the person that would have helped me out with my tricks, my bag of tricks.
Bag of tricks. Well, every bowler needs a bag of tricks.
Yeah.
Again, for people who don't know cricket, bowling accurately is actually incredibly difficult. Mm. It seems like something that should be relatively easy. It isn't.
No. Yeah,
it's very difficult.
That's, you're so right. And it's the main thing that you try and get kids to, they all want to run in and they want to just throw the ball down as fast as possible. And I keep saying, it's line and length, guys, line and length. And I said, if you don't have that, it's wonderful when a captain comes up to you and says, put the ball here. And you can put the ball there. And that's what they want. Or they know the pros and cons of what the batsman can do at the other end. You know, their strengths, their weaknesses, what they can do, and you're able to put the ball there. That is a skill.
Well, you are now talking about cricket in pretty microscopic terms, about we put the ball there and we put the ball there for that batsman and we try to do this and set the field. That's the stuff of the quality. I was never quite the quality like you are. But tell me a little bit about your journey into playing for Ireland.
I had played schools cricket, so I was North Leinster, and so I knew a lot of the same people that were playing. My peers would have all come up the same route in San Sabina and in Sutton. So
Who played cricket?
Yes.
On their hockey pitch?
Yes.
Because I lived in Offingdon Park, very close to that, and I noticed that in the early 80s, a lot of the convent girls' schools were playing cricket.
Yeah, it was started up, and I think my PE teacher at the time, Joan Burgess, would have been involved in Clontarf, so she would have been playing there, and she set up that team in San Sabina and brought along some of the guys from Clontarf Cricket Club down as coaches, and it was brilliantly received. I know, first of all, I wasn't opening the bowling, I wasn't opening the batting, I think I missed one of the games, but I remember my grandmother saying to me, she said, if you get Stella Owens out, I'll give you £5, and I said, I'm a professional. So my whole joy in life, because Stella was someone I always looked up to.
Well, Stella Owens, just for, again, anybody who didn't hear the podcast, Stella Owens was also played for Clontarf, was an outstanding player, played cricket for Ireland with you. And she played on the underage boys' teams until she was banned from that. And I do remember playing against her. And I remember a boy from Harrow School saying, they've got a girl. This was shocking.
The horror. Yeah.
and everyone said, even then, there was an iconic quality to her. Everybody said,
yeah.
And she's pretty good, so...
Just everything about her. Her action was beautiful. Yeah. She was a natural athlete.
Yeah.
And was just somebody who, I suppose, we all looked up to. But Stella and myself, there's only about a year and a half between us, but from a cricketing point of view, it could have been decades between us. It just felt like she had been around for years, donkeys, compared to we were all the beginners. But we played for my first... I think I was only 16 or 17 when I was picked on the North Leinster side. And from there on, and I wouldn't have opened the bowling. That would have been Lily and Stella. Mm. And I might have been maybe second called upon, you know, to bowl. I definitely probably wouldn't have batted, but I had a good arm from fielding. So I would definitely have been a good fielder. But batting fell by the wayside, especially in Clontarf.
So well, you can't generally really be both if you're a fast bowler or what, because in an opening bowler, you tend not to be a higher order batsman.
You tend not to be. But I mean, as an all rounder, I definitely wasn't pursuing that end of things. Mm. I was definitely just, I wanted to open the bowling and that was it. Certainly Lily and Stella would have developed themselves into, and Stella would have been the same as me. She wasn't getting a chance to bat. But they were superb. Lily Owens was a superb tennis player and just had a natural hand-eye coordination, and batting came very easy for her as well.
So you made your debut for Ireland in July 1986?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that was amazing. I remember, first of all, we all gathered after an Interpro, and we were all in Pembroke Cricket Club, and we all sat around waiting, and we all, as players, so the South Leinster, any of the Northern girls, we were all there in Pembroke, and we all put our names into the hat to see who was going to be picked. And I was kind of a bit hopeful, maybe my own team, I might have put myself in, but I wasn't sure if anyone else was going to be on it. And they came out at about 8 o'clock and they announced the team, and I was on it, and there was screams and roars. And all I wanted to do was to run round the back of the bar to the old telephones where you press button A or press button B and ring mum to say I'd got on the team. But it was a little bit awkward because one of the girls I knew, I was replacing her.
Which is always a consideration, not that you would think at first, but there's the great story about Ollie Campbell and Tony Ward, who I both spoke to, where Tony Ward had been the incumbent out half on a tour of Australia, and then without warning, he was dropped.
Yeah.
And he said to Ollie Campbell, he says, you're in. And Ollie Campbell was so shocked, he thought that he meant you're in as a centre, not as an out half, not as a replacement.
Yeah.
And it was only... at some time later, he actually realised Tony wasn't playing.
I know, yeah.
And then he had to deal with that fallout too, which probably wasn't that easy for him. So you have to be respectful to the people that you're...
Absolutely, and I would have been very friendly with her, and I don't want to name her, but I remember her parents weren't impressed, and they came up to me afterwards and said, oh, you know, I would take that smile off your face. My daughter will be back on that team soon. And I remember saying, well, I tell you, she'll have to fight for it in my head, because I said I just was determined that I was going to keep the position.
And so, obviously, ambitious dash pushy parents.
Yes.
And how was it said? Was that said with real needle, I presume?
I felt it was, yeah, because there was no need for that, because the hysteria and the affection that I was getting from everybody else and the, oh, this is brilliant, and, you know, slap on the head and, you know, arms around, hugs and loves all around. And suddenly, and I always remember it, and I remember saying, oh, my God, if this ever happens to me, I will never go up to somebody and say, it's just funny as an 18-year-old kid that is what I remember from the night that I was picked.
Sponsored by Expressway. With My Expressway, free travel pass holders can reserve their seats online at expressway.ie or at our ticket machines in stations.
Are you interested in trying a new smartphone but still a little unsure? Do you want a phone that offers larger icons with louder sound and an interface that has technology designed for seniors? Well, why not choose from the Doro range by simply visiting doro.ie. Doro, make friends with innovation.
I just wouldn't have expected it. I wouldn't have encountered it at all.
But it's
ever.
Deeply, deeply competitive. And I mean, I did play cricket, but I also played a lot of tennis.
Yeah.
So I was aware of, you know, very ambitious parents.
I would say it's much more, it's worse now, considering it's so competitive now. I mean, there was only a few people playing, but I suppose the potential, I mean, this particular girl had been on the team from nearly the beginning, you know, was a superb bowler, could bat, wasn't maybe the fittest that she could have been, but I was definitely coming in as, you know, her replacement, and it didn't dawn on me at the time because all I heard was my name. I didn't hear anyone else's name when they were calling it out, and I was just, oh my God, I'm on.
Well, it's the understandable human reaction.
Yeah.
And what happened to this, your rivalry with this particular player, by the way, was there?
Oh, no, we were absolutely no bother between us. No bother whatsoever, but it was just the one thing I remember. I remember being very wary of seeing the parents around the pitch who continued supporting cricket and everything. There was never any issue. They never said a word to me. Everything was very positive after that. It was just that one night that maybe they were their disappointment. They couldn't contain it either, and that's how it came out. But it's funny. It's just the one thing you remember.
Well, sport is incredibly competitive, and the higher you go up, it doesn't have to be at a high level to be competitive. People are murderously competitive at the lowest level. What do they say? It only matters so much because the stakes are so low. But in your case, the stakes are pretty high.
And I would always have been competitive. So part of me would have not just that statement alone would have made me even more determined to keep my position.
So your career stats are pretty impressive. You have 3 of the top 10 performances of all time from an Irish women's player. Mm. Your one-day international economy is the 8th best in the world ever at 2.15. That is an incredible stat.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't know that. These are great. Keep going.
According to Dr. Google, damn.
God bless him.
33 interpros, 61 wickets, and an average of 8.7. So, I mean, that you must have been very good for a long time because you played for over 10 years for Ireland.
Yeah, 10 years on the Irish team. And this is where it stems back to the accuracy piece. If you are... Noel O'Mahony was our coach, and he used to say, he said, they're just going to see you off and they will take their runs from the others. And I think that's, in hindsight, that's what they did. I'm not saying, and that was in the game we played, but that was 50 overs. So it's totally different than the girls are playing at the moment, which is, you know, 20 overs and they're just closing their eyes and you're being hit over the park, and it's totally different now. We played our 20 over games just in our league in Leinster, and everything else then was either 40 overs or it was 50 overs for North Leinster or South Leinster into pros, and then our Irish cricket could have been up to 60 overs.
Now, you told me privately before that you wouldn't think twice about bowling 25 overs in a day or more.
Oh, I did, yeah. Well, it was meant to be a test match against the Dutch, and we were over playing in the Netherlands, and I think we ended up just doing so well. I got 7 wickets for 21 runs off 25 overs. It was something ridiculous, or 4 for 25 off 35 overs the following day. And I bowled. But I literally was bowling. There was no runs being hit. I was on a buzz because I was getting so many wickets. But
nobody would be allowed to do that now. They wouldn't have somebody bowl that many overs. Now, of course, the games wouldn't be that long.
No.
They'd play matches of that length more generally. But still, was there any sense that perhaps this could result in some injuries? Or?
Well, I think I was having injuries way before that anyway, because I had been playing since I was 9. There's cement nets in Clontarf. Everywhere we played, it was cement nets. So you were trundling in and jumping down on cement the whole time, and it was ricocheting up through your legs, and it did certainly affect my back. I mean, I was injured. I was having to get physio and try and go swimming and strengthen up my core nearly my whole career. You know, if the girls were going out after a game, I would be at home with a hot bottle on my back. Or they invented, instead of the lovely smell that you might get from
Wintergreen,
they introduced another one that didn't smell, that had all sorts of things in it. And I used to think this was great because Mum used to run up the stairs and she'd smell it and start going, "Who's injured?" And we'd all be in denial, and then Mum would smell it off us. And then so they introduced one that wasn't a smell off it, and I'd lash it on my back so I'd keep playing so I wouldn't miss a game.
So you're obviously a pretty psychologically robust, tough performer who didn't shirk responsibilities because you were injured or hurting.
No, definitely. Okay. No, I only missed games. I had got the chicken pox when I was about 23. Mortified I was so old, and the laughing on the phone of Lily when I had to tell her she was our captain, and Stella, they couldn't believe it was for a final. And there I was sitting at home with chamomile lotion and Sudocream, it's covered from head to toe in spots.
You seem to have a very holistic view for somebody who was playing at such a high level. You seem to have quite a sanguine and holistic view towards, certainly looking back on it, but at the time you give the impression that you were quite relaxed about it, were you?
Yeah. I think I was just so thrilled. I mean, I absolutely adored going away on tour, and I mean, it was just fantastic.
I was going to ask you, where did you get to go to it?
I mean, our first tour. I mean, I was 18 years of age, and for some reason, an English travel agent decided to sponsor 15 Irish girls to head across over to Trinidad and Tobago. And to this day, I've no idea why that was. So we had supporters going, and they all paid for themselves, and we stayed in we went to Tobago first and then back to Trinidad. And for me, who had never been out of the country, I'd never been on a plane before that.
Really?
So I was pushed on the plane when we got to Dublin Airport because I could see the nuts and bolts on the side of the plane. And then I was on the plane, and we were British West Indies Airlines, better walk if able, was the catchphrase. And we were sitting over the wing, and I was saying to Miriam beside me, I said, "Miriam, I think the engine is on fire." And she looked out and she said, "It's a cloud, you fool." And I go, "Oh, jeez." But I'd never flying is just totally, like, if Mum had said to us we're going away during the cricket season, David and myself would have had absolute anarchy. No way.
So you found it was a great way to travel as well. What was Trinidad and Tobago like?
Well, it was poor and it was rough. It just felt rough. You know, we were allowed out. We stayed in apartments, and I was with, because Sive Young and myself were the two youngest on the side, we had the pleasure of staying with all the, as we call, the Alakadoos. So it was our coach and his wife. It was the manager of the team. It was, and I was, and all the Alakadoos.
And who was the manager?
The manager would have been, I think, Hilly O'Reilly at the time. And then we had the committee, the president of the Irish Women's Cricket Union would have been there. I was trying to think who else would have been at it. But we had to stay with them. And at 6:30 every morning, these lovely women used to come in and make the breakfast. And I only got a bed because I was playing, so I had to sleep on a floor. So conditions weren't great, but the others all had a great time in their own apartments. About 6 or 7 to an apartment. And we were the two youngest, so we were left with all the Alakadoos. We were raging.
And where else did you
After that, we went to Australia in 88, which was totally amazing. And we had some amazing outfits. One outfit was known as the Herbaceous Border, which looked lovely in the shop when you just saw one. It was a two-piece. And this was to... We travel in our Irish uniforms, so we had our blazers and grey skirts. And then if there was a social night, so we didn't have to wear our Irish blazers, we had these, it's like a twin set. It was a skirt and a blouse, but it was full of flowers. The brightest, loudest flowers you have ever seen. And in the shop, you might say, that's okay, you know. But when you saw us all together, total herbaceous border, all lined up, 16 of us, all shapes, sizes, heights, everything. It was horrendous. And the minute I came home, I gave it to Mum and she wore it to Bridge for years, that outfit. She loved it. And I just thought it was an absolute shocker. I said, no way am I ever wearing that again. But I stayed on for, we went to, within that tour, and it was so well organised. It was the bicentennial. The millennium here and the bicentennial over in Australia. So we were swapping gear to beat the band and then we were told we weren't allowed and I pretended I still had all my gear. But at the end of the tournament, it was brilliant. It was fantastically well run. Now, they had been in other World Cups, so they kind of knew what the story was and they were just really well organised. And we stayed in Perth first and then we flew.
This was the World Cup.
Yeah. We stayed in Perth and then we flew to Melbourne. And then went up to Sydney for the end. And they took us to, where did they take it? They took us to the Melbourne Cricket Ground when we were there, which was absolutely amazing. And we were allowed to sit near the members, just off the member section. So we were told we weren't allowed to the Mexican wave. And we were also told we weren't allowed to wear thongs. Now, to me,
that wasn't ever going to be an issue per se, or was it?
Well, I didn't know. I was going, that's very personal. How are they going to know if we're wearing a thong or not? Only to find out that it was a flip-flop and not a pair of underwear. And I said, needless to say, I was delighted to find out that it was a flip-flop and not an underwear. So they'd no way of telling, but we had to dress up for that. But it was just fantastically well organised.
And just generally, when you were... you know, representing Ireland. Did you get any sense that women's cricket was taken less seriously?
No, in fairness, we didn't. Like, there was... we were a novelty. And certainly in England, the West Indies, I felt it was very new. And women's cricket, and also... I didn't feel it there. We had a great time there. But I never felt that there was any sort of discrimination. That the fact that we were women, we weren't going to get the best pitches, we weren't going to get the wickets. Everything was absolutely roll out the red carpet to us. We had all male umpires. We had people scoring for us. The tees were done the exact same way as the men. So I never felt anything was different. Now, maybe behind the scenes, there could have been all sorts of anarchy going on, but we never felt it. I certainly never noticed it. I was thrilled, people coming over and, you know, being a centre of attention or whatever, being a novelty. I always knew we were a novelty, women playing cricket.
A question I've been asked to ask you, I really want to throw some light in this one. As a fast bowler, were you mean? Did you want to get people? Because a lot of fast bowlers want to get people.
The people I was getting or wanted to get were actually my friends, so it made it a little awkward. And there was only, like, bearing in mind, we were playing the same people all the time.
Yeah, did you bowl bouncers, like?
I'd put one in short, yeah, quite often. I used to clip them under the ribs just to keep them in tow. I would have, and I wouldn't have suffered fools. Like, if people were messing down the end of the crease, I'd have just done my little bit, my end, just to stall them or to...
What's
to
messing wait. For you?
Messing to me is just as they're ready, just as I was about to bowl, they'd suddenly just come out of their position and they might have fixed their pads, so they might have gone and, you know, settled themselves with their hands again, and I would be raging because I'd have done three steps in, I'd have had to start my run-up again. So I'd have left them there. They get into position and I would leave them there for the few minutes just waiting, just shining the ball or just...
Hell, I have no fury. Kind of
it was a bit like that. Yeah, I get annoyed, but...
Okay, but you were able to turn it to your own advantage.
Oh, yeah, totally. Right. Yeah, yeah. And as I said, like, whatever Being a bowler, it's not just going down, running down and bowling. I mean, Pod Hughes, who was our coach in Clontarf, he was just superb with just different ways of holding the ball that would get a different angle for me. Looking at the weather to see what way it was coming across, especially in Clontarf, because it really does just whip across the ground. And using that to my advantage. It just that so sometimes you wouldn't have needed the speed. It was what I was able to do with the ball, and he'd get a great buzz out of that. If he'd try and do it with mats and say put it at 45 degrees, and I'd look at him as if glazing over, and he'd say, okay, hold it this way, and he'd take it off me and put it into my hand and just get me to bowl, and I would just do it, and he'd roar laughing down the end of the crease, just because I was able to do it. But like, the stuff I learned from him is just, it was just brilliant.
Because being a bowler, ultimately, you've really got to think all the time about what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's not just chucking it down.
No, it's where you're putting it, who you're batting against, what are their weaknesses, what are they good at, what are they bad at, what have you noticed. I didn't keep a book, like, of people. I know some do. Certainly now they would. I would be encouraging them to say, yes, the batsman you're facing, what runs did they get off you? Where did you put the ball? I would always say to a bowler, yeah, keep a track of your runs and your... I knew exactly what I was hit for at the end of every match.
And how is cricket different now in terms of approach for... You know, you said it was, you know, nowadays they'd be far more... presumably far more agog, awash with figures and stats and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the game has moved on. The 20-over game, it's a much quicker, more aggressive game. It's certainly hit out from the very beginning.
And what do you think of that, the new kind of that 20-over format?
I think that's fine. I'm sorry now that I know Leinster have got rid of the 40-over, and I think that's a huge mistake, really. It was the Pilkington Cup. It was set up by Clarissa Pilkington, Crawford Pilkington, and we would have played that certainly in Clontarf for the 10 years. It's been played for about 30 years, and it was a 40-over game, and it really brought the kids who were playing 20, it gave them a bridge between that and maybe a longer period of time. So 40-over cricket, you might get 8 overs to bowl, maybe 10, and then go into your 50-over Irish games, and I think it's a shame that they're missing out on that.
Well, 40 overs is proper good length.
It's a nice length. Yeah.
You get to appreciate the game in 40 overs. Why are we in this relentless march towards shorter, faster, sharper?
Unfortunately, I think it's what the public want as well. I think they like that quick game. We've seen how the 100 has taken off in England. It's hugely successful. The same with the Indian Premier League as well. It's what people want. They love the excitement of the game. I have to say, I love it. I love watching it. But I do enjoy the longer 60 ball, the real skill of the longer game.
Well, is that being lost, though? Is the skill, or are the skills just changing?
But only certain people are getting to play that longer game. You know, it's not played in all the leagues all the way down, and I think that's the shame. You know, I think 40 overs is the length that the lower you go, I think 40 overs is what they're playing. I don't think they're playing anything longer than that. I think that's a shame in the men's game, you know, but look, it's what the guys might want now. I don't know.
You are now the president of Clontarf Cricket Club, so you've kind of gone full circle. Mm. That is in its own way, fast bowling, presidents of clubs, traditionally male pursuits, although you seem very, very feminine, dare I say it, in your kind of way.
Always have been, yeah. Always
cat-like, have. I think is the term.
The cat-like.
Am I allowed to say that?
I can say whatever you want. I don't mind. I'm not a bit PC. But no, I think it's important that I am playing. And the same when I played cricket. You're playing in a male-dominated sport. And it's important that I still remained a girl playing a male sport. And I've always been like that, whether it's dresses, makeup. I was always coming straight from work with lipstick on. One of the Dutch umpires used to call me Hot Lips, just simply because I would always have chapstick or something on. Wouldn't have dawned on me. We played in skirts. It was always very, very feminine. But I think it's important now. Still, I'm a very strong person. I'm still very competitive, whether it's work or whether it's now as president. I love the president role in Clontarf.
What does that involve?
Well, you're on the executive committee, but you're a figurehead. It's not, I don't have to deal with the day-to-day, the running of the club. I'm involved and I'm told absolutely everything. And I do have to make decisions but they'd be more, I suppose, joint decisions. Sue, we're telling you this. Are you okay with it? Would you prefer something else? But certainly the committee are absolutely amazing. And I'm only as good as my committee anyway. But I love the bit where I'm welcoming everyone to the club. I think it's really important to have teas and get people in after the game and, you know, to say hello to the opposition. And because we've lost that before COVID. It was, the teas were always there. Now we only do teas for the first 11.
And why is that? Why has COVID normalised that?
Normalised it because it's very difficult to get people. It's a way out. People saw it as, great, I don't have to do teas anymore. We're so lucky with Mandy Erskine that she's, you know, willing to do the teas in Clontarf for the men's firsts. We're one of a handful of clubs that do teas. And I just think it's really important. And for as long as I'm president, certainly I would be pushing for the teas in Clontarf.
And you mentioned as well, coming straight from work, lipstick, hot lips. So you found the time to have a full-time job and to have a family.
You must be
very well organised. Pack all this in.
I've been in the bank nearly 40 years now and I've always loved it. Absolutely love what I do. But I only actually went into the bank because I thought they let you off to play cricket. And that was my initial, I said, what would I like to do when I grow up? Oh, I go into the bank, should they let people off? They let sportsmen off to play cricket. And it absolutely worked. I got paid while I was, you know, while I was off playing at different places. I had a great time. I represented the bank in different sports, which I loved as well. And then when I settled down, I'd retired from cricket. Well, I had to retire from cricket, which is a whole other story. But I got married. I'd Connor and Andrew. And I always said I was geographically challenged. So when they'd say, do you want to work in town? Oh, no. So I was working really close to where I lived. I had an amazing childminder who made my life really easy. And I was able to be home for the boys, collect them at 5 o'clock every day. So I didn't feel I was missing out. I think I'd be a better mum, the fact that I worked, because I think I'd go mad if I had to stay at home.
Well, you really do kind of sound like, it's a terrible cliche, this, you know, the idea of women having it all. I don't quite know what that fundamentally means, but you actually sound like you did kind of have it all.
Well, cricket was 6 months of the year. So I knew, and what an amazing, during the summer, what else would you want to be but just down in the club or playing? But I did step away from the club for a while because when I wasn't playing, certainly when I had to give up cricket, I really was, I just didn't want anything to do with cricket.
You were injured.
I was injured and had to give up. I could hardly walk by the time I was finished. I had no feeling in three fingers. My nerves, just, I think everything stemming from my neck and my back. So I knew, I remember in Australia, the physio said to me, you physically won't be able to carry a child. Now I was 21 and I was going, I don't care about that. I have a match. Just get me ready. I just had no idea the consequences of that. And I had no interest really in what he was saying because that felt so far down the line. But Richard has been, my husband has been brilliant, supportive. He adores cricket. So that helps. The boys played schoolboy cricket for a while down in the club. So I always kept my interest and always kept down, you know, going down to the club. And I've been coaching down there for about 12, 15 years now. Yeah.
And finally, if I can ask you, what are your greatest memories? Were they the great performances or just the camaraderie?
They're still my friends. The camaraderie is huge. They are still, we had the Australian women over in Clontarf and I only had to go into two websites and I had a gang of 30 girls come down to the club for a reunion. During the summer, and they would still be people that I could just ring and say, come on, we're going out, or if Sive is home from London, we all go in and meet Sive. So it's huge. The camaraderie is absolutely hugely important. I'd hate to be away and not enjoy the people I'm away with.
Well, I'm afraid we've kind of run out of time here, Susan. I know you're thrilled, but I got to say, you are an inspirational figure. Everything you've done, it seems to have been with such a good grace and a combination of pretty dogged competitiveness and its opposite. So it's wonderful to talk to you. And I know you were inducted into the Hall of Fame. Congratulations on that in 2020.
Thank you.
I wish you the very best of luck, and we all do here at the Senior Times, for your future endeavours.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's a pleasure.
An will phone poke a new wet, an will knappy no foom nis orja wet. Nis eskele husaj, faker na phone ain't a katal gwyn, an cho, eg daro. An vone klishte is dani, gidi gohan la hai glina, agus taskina. Ta rod egin, gogachtina. Ta nismo olis, eg, daro.com.